In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thank you so much for joining us, and a very happy Friday to you.
What's up?
That's the energy I like.
That's the last of it. No more energy for the rest of the episode.
Let's meet the crew. I'm Kelly Lawler, a TV critic, and if I could go to space, I would say no thank you.
I'm Brian Truitt, film critic and entertainment writer, and if I could go to space, I'd just do a ton of watching stuff and reading stuff, so I might as well just stay here.
Our co-host, Mr. Brett Molina, is sick today, so we're wishing him well, but the show must go on. If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership are available every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you happen to listen. And, you know, if you happen to be on Apple Podcasts, wouldn't it be just wonderful if you could write us a quick review? Doing that, it helps other fans like you find the show, helps us stay on the air. And if you do, we will give you a shout out on next week's episode and we will read your review. So if you want us to say something stupid, this is your opportunity.
As if we don't say enough stupid already. We'll add some more stupid.
Fair point. Well made. Don't forget, along with leaving us a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod, or you can send us an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. This week, we are about to achieve liftoff.
First man to walk on the moon. That'd be something.
We've chosen a job so difficult, requiring so many technological developments. We're gonna have to start from scratch.
Neil, if this flight is successful, you'll go down in history. What kind of thoughts do you have about that?
We're planning on the flight being successful.
The vehicle's not safe.
We need to fail down here so we don't fail up there.
This isn't just another trip, Neil.
Five.
You're not just going to work.
Do you think you're coming back?
That was from First Man, the new film in theaters today about Neil Armstrong and Apollo 11, starring Ryan Gosling and directed by La La Land director Damien Chazelle. Between this and Sean Penn's The First on Hulu, which is about a fictional mission to Mars, we're thinking about our favorite space-related movies and TV shows, from Apollo 13 to Gravity to these new entrants into the mini-genre. Let's get right to it. When we're talking about space movies, we're talking about the stuff that's based on a true story or is very light science fiction. No aliens, no light speed, just sort of what we already know about space travel and maybe a little bit into the future. Gravity and Interstellar pretty much count, but Star Wars doesn't.
Star Wars is technically the past.
Technically, Star Wars is the past. That is very accurate.
Point me.
But first, let's talk about First Man, pun intended. Brian, you didn't seem to like it quite as much as some of the early critics who were loving it.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, I think here's the thing. So it's a real achievement because, like, the moon landing's awesome. You know, there's a lot of stuff where Ryan Gosling, who's playing Neil Armstrong, goes through all this kind of life or death, kind of hellish experiences. It pretty much tracks from 61 to 69, all NASA's missions to kind of get ready for the moon landing, to beat Russia to there after Kennedy said, hey, we need to get to the moon by the end of the decade. That was probably his exact quote. The action stuff's really kind of cool. The moon landing is friggin' fantastic, and IMAX, go see that. That's really neat. But there's not much else. I think Neil Armstrong was kind of a reserved, quiet guy, and Ryan Gosling plays him as a reserved, quiet guy. Do you really want Ryan Gosling playing a reserved, quiet guy? He's a very charming dude, and he does a fine job, but it's just like, you can't connect with him. The whole big emotional undercurrent of the film is that his daughter had a brain tumor and died when she was 2.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it starts with 61, where he does the X-15 test flight, where he goes above Earth's atmosphere and sees kind of space for the first time. And then after that, he's working to help his daughter out, you know, trying to get his daughter cured and all that kind of other stuff. And then she dies. Then he puts himself all into his work because he's an engineer and he wants to, like, be an astronaut when the Project Gemini applications were in. So then that starts him on his journey toward the moon. But the emotional undercurrent is the daughter, and she stays with him all through it. But other than that, that's really it. There's not much really to hook into other than Claire Foy, who plays Neil Armstrong's wife, Janet. Or she not in the movie, the movie would work. Because she's kind of like, she really loves Neil, but is worried that like he's not talking to their kids about that daddy might not come home from the moon. Or when, you know, Kyle Chandler's character turns off the communication during Gemini 8, the reentry, when they're spinning out of control and he doesn't want the wife to hear it, she marches down and asks him, like, what are you doing? Let me hear this. So she's kind of the firecracker of the thing that kind of balances out Gosling's quiet reservedness.
I know it's like a Neil Armstrong biopic, but does it tell us anything more about like Buzz Aldrin or anyone else who was in Apollo 11?
Buzz Aldrin's kind of played like kind of a jerk.
Aw. You know,
it's like, it's funny because like he is real like annoying and real cocky and everything. So it's like a yin yang to Neil Armstrong, who like is very businesslike, you know, when it comes to this. There's a press conference. Buzz Aldrin says he's taking something of his wife's to the moon. You know, he's real jokey about it at the press conference. And then someone asked Neil, what are you taking to the moon? And he's like, I'd like some more fuel. It was like real deadpan. So that's interesting. But it's just like every time he's on screen, it's just like everybody's giving him side eye because like he's just annoying everybody, which is kind of an interesting thing because you're like, I don't think of Buzz Aldrin as like the most annoying guy in the room.
Yeah, I thought it was, I haven't seen it, but I thought it was really interesting when it was announced and when I saw trailers and stuff that it was so focused on Neil, because everyone knows that name and probably a lot of people also know Buzz Aldrin, but I...
Because he lived longer.
Yeah, I don't know the other people and I feel kind of bad about that. And, you know, that was one of the things I loved about Hidden Figures was how much more I got to learn about the whole thing. So I'm glad that there's a little bit of that in this movie, too.
Well, and then like Ed White, who I've never heard of, but he's like the closest astronaut to Armstrong, played by Jason Clarke. Fantastic character, fantastic acting job. But it's just like, I've never heard of that guy.
Yeah.
And like Gus Grissom is in it. But spoiler alert, if you haven't like cracked a history book in a while, he dies like partway through the movie.
Yeah.
Shea Whigham plays him. And the guy who plays the Riddler on Gotham is one of the astronauts who dies with Gus Grissom. It's just like, I think he's in the movie like two scenes. So there's like a lot of interesting characters, but they kind of come and go.
Yeah. There's a very similarly titled show on Hulu right now called The First, which came out in September and stars Sean Penn. And it is about a fictional mission to Mars in like 30-ish years.
Well, tell me this. Is it pretentious because Sean Penn's in it?
It is so pretentious. It's created by Bo Willimon, who created House of Cards. You know, I think he wanted to do something that was like much less cynical, and he clearly thinks that space travel is like one of the purest and coolest and most honorable things you can do. You can tell this guy is behind space travel, but like, he can't make it exciting is the problem. You know, there's a whole episode that takes place in a congressional hearing where they're trying to get funding for the space mission.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Well, is that a budget thing? They don't want to like pay for like the CGI or the special effects of like space fiction?
That could be part of it.
Let's do it in a congressional hearing.
I kind of think it's more like he wanted to like really ground it in the characters, but I thought all the characters were boring and annoying, and it was kind of so all over the place. It's like, it's about Sean Penn and his daughter who was a drug addict, but like you don't find out she was a drug addict for a while, so she's just like blandly troubled for a while. But then it's also about this woman who was supposed to go on the Mars trip who then gets cut from the Mars trip, and her husband, and they're having problems. They want to have kids, but like it just is all over the place. And then it's about the lieutenant who feels like she doesn't have enough authority. Like, it's trying to create like a big cast of characters, but it never spends enough time with any of them for me to get to know them. And then I got annoyed and bored. And it also spends a lot of time flashing back to Sean Penn's late wife, played by Melissa George, who had like a lot of mental health problems. And it just, none of it makes any sense, to be very honest. And it was so slow and I was so bored watching it. I was so excited to be done with the screeners so I could write the review and then move on with my life. It felt like space was completely like a side note. Like, they were excited about space, but it wasn't ever the main thrust of the action. There was no, they barely even talked like technical terms about space. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, here's all this human drama that was kind of badly done, and then space was the side effect.
I feel like something like The Right Stuff, or even like, you know, a lot of the First Man stuff, that would be interesting to put as a TV show, because even though you know what's kind of what happened, it would be interesting to kind of deal with this character's studies and everything.
Yeah.
But I think we haven't traveled to space in any real way in such a long time. Then I think it all has to be fiction. So it all has to be like, you know, out of somebody's mind. And I think, you know, somebody who's never been to space, they might have a real big interest in it, but they don't really kind of know what the kind of coolness about it.
Yeah.
You know, it might not translate as well.
But yeah, so speaking of those movies, talking about these like spacey films, realistic space films, whatever you want to call them, what makes them good?
I think you have to have the wonder of it. You have to see the bigness of space. I mean, kind of the whole point of these movies and why we went to the moon and space and everything anyway is to explore, you know, kind of we like explore all of our own country. It's a manifest destiny kind of thing. You want to go like find out where else can you go in the universe, because, you know, we're in this like small little planet. What's big to us, but in the grand scheme of things, it's very small. So I think there's a natural human want to like see what else is out there, see what's beyond the stars and that sort of thing. So I think anything that captures the bigness of space, but also the dangers of space, because it's like when people are out on a boat or something, I don't think they really get how dangerous water is, even though it is. But just like think about space, and it's like a billion times worse than water is, because there's nowhere to go. There's no land.
Yeah.
You know, if you're out there, you're effed. You know, so I think there has to be kind of like the dichotomy of the, you know, the majesty of like what else is out there beyond us, but also the holy crap, you know, there's a lot of danger to this as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think Apollo 13 is one of the reasons that I'm very, very afraid of space, even though there is no event in which I would very likely be confronted with actual space, but still counted among my phobias. I agree with everything you said. I also kind of feel like there's, especially for stuff that's based on a true story, there has to be that sort of like claustrophobic aspect to it. It like contrasts with the bigness of space, because you're stuck in the little pod, or you're stuck in your little spacesuit, and there's everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And I think that's a really good tension. And, you know, it's got to be a little scary. It's got to be a little thrilling. And hopefully, not a necessity, but for me, a happy ending is good. Because we see space as this sort of final frontier, to keep quoting Kennedy today. And it is so majestic and we want to explore it. It can be scary and it is dangerous. But I think at the end, we want to hold on to that idea that we can, if not conquer it, at least take a decent whack at it. And so I don't want to be too depressed when I leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing about Apollo 13 is as much harrowing kind of stuff as they go through, it has a happy ending.
Yeah.
There's all this kind of stuff. It's just like, is Neil Armstrong going to die in this jet? Is he going to die during reentry? Is he going to die on the moon? Well, no. There's a level of surprise that's kind of out of there. We know the moon's going to be cool. We know that's going to happen. We know he's going to get back alive.
Yeah. So what are your favorites in this mini genre?
So I don't know if we're counting Armageddon, but I think
I would count Armageddon.
I think for a B movie kind of thing, I think that counts, because it's just like there's a realness to that, even though it is so kind of absurd. You know, if there's an asteroid coming towards you, you're not going to want the smart people to go up there and try to destroy it. You want smart people down here to figure out how to destroy it. And you want a bunch of like expendable oil drillers to get on a shuttle and go up there and, you know, nuke it themselves, because if they die, oh well, you know, and some of them did.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Bruce Willis dies.
Yeah. But it's really heartbreaking. So that's cool. I think Interstellar I really liked, just because of the expansiveness of it, and kind of, it's kind of weird. Gravity's fantastic. Gravity and The Martian, and back in the day, The Right Stuff, you know, for rousing like real life thing, The Right Stuff has The Right Stuff way more than First Man. But Martian and Gravity are great.
Yeah. I already mentioned it, but Apollo 13 for me is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I think one of the things I really love about it is that they made all the stuff on the ground, which is really just scientists thinking really hard and writing equations really hard, they made that as exciting as everything that was going on up in space. You know, one of my favorite scenes from the movie is when they have to try to literally fit the square peg in the round hole. If you've never seen it, there's a moment when they have to change oxygen filters on the spacecraft. And they have to use square filters in a round filter thing. I don't know. Science is hard. And it's just like, it encapsulates sort of like the ridiculousness of bureaucracy. And that sounds like something that definitely would happen. And also the way they do it is so cool. And it's just, it's a celebration of never giving up, which I think is a really big theme in a lot of movies of this era in the 90s, especially that star Tom Hanks. And even though I also knew the ending, like you did in First Man, I was, you know, there are so many moments when you really feel like it could go wrong. And I think there were so many little, in real life, there were so many little tiny moments where it could have gone wrong.
And you connected with those characters real well. And
That's
the thing with Hidden Figures, too, where Hidden Figures, compared to First Man, you have the calculation and math, and there's the kind of the whole, obviously, civil rights angle and prejudice and, you know, the time frame of that, of the 60s and everything. But you connect with those people hard, like every single one of them. Not only Taraji Henson's character, Katherine Johnson, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Katherine Johnson. So you connect with her, but you also connect with John Glenn, who's like in the movie like 10 minutes. So I think you connect with everybody. And I think that's the kind of thing the First Man was missing.
So what are flops in this genre for you?
I mean, Life was pretty bad, but that's kind of like, that probably is more science fiction. Passengers. Very problematic.
Mm.
And it didn't need to be. You know, it's a little rapey and it doesn't need to be.
Lesson to Hollywood. It doesn't need to be. You heard it here first.
It's just weird. It's just really kind of like creepy. And it doesn't need to be. That's probably a stretch in terms of these movies. I think there's going to be a lot of movies in that, now that we have the news that like the whole world's going to end in like 11 years or something.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot more of those movies where it's just like, let's get the F off of this planet, you know, as fast as possible. Like Passengers was. Passengers was about getting the F off the planet and like having a colony somewhere else. And then, you know, Chris Pratt just wakes people up willy-nilly. But you get ready for more of those movies. But they just need to be better, less rapey.
Yes. The first touches on that a little bit. It's like there's this woman who's kind of like a Elon Musk kind of, you know, billionaire who's helping with the space project. And she's like, we got to go to Mars so that eventually we can get off the Earth. And the senators don't like that argument. But I actually disagree about Interstellar. I never was a fan. I think there were parts of it that were really good. I really liked the bit where they go to the planet within the event horizon and all the time passes. Like, that's the coolest part of Interstellar to me. The rest of it was like a little pretentious, to use that word again. And it just, I didn't connect with the characters before that moment when they went away. And then happily by the end of the movie, I did connect with them. But yeah, it never totally worked for me. But there are a lot of movies in this genre that I really like, despite how terrified I am of space. So, yeah, you just mentioned that you think there's going to be a lot more of these as we think more about climate change.
Well, Interstellar was a perfect example of it.
Absolutely.
Did it really well.
Why do we think that these films do well? You know, why do they connect with audiences? They tend to generate prestige and Oscar buzz and bigger stars and bigger directors than other kinds of science fiction.
Well, I think they speak to our inner need of exploring. Back in the day, I remember when I was a kid, the Young NASA Kids magazine.
Aww.
I would watch the shuttle go up. I watched the shuttle explode. That was kind of a weird day. That was part of our childhood. I don't think it's part of people's childhoods now. I think, you know, we as a country don't really have the passion that we once did. Instead of looking up at the stars, we look down on our phones. It's a very different kind of society. There's not the same want. I'm not going to get into Space Force, but I mean, that's a whole other thing. But I think there's no like, oh, hey, I want to go live on Mars. Hey, we should figure out how to go populate Venus. You know, there's none of that. There's, you know, I think we go up there and like fix the Hubble telescope every 6 months. I mean, that seems to be like the farthest of our, you know, kind of like space passions anymore. Like First Man, who's going to watch that movie? Other than Ryan Gosling fans and like people who grew up in 69 can remember that event. You know, I think that movie might miss a generation because they're like, well, you know, I can read about that in the history books.
Yeah.
They're just not that into space. But who knows, you know, in 10 years, you know, when another generation comes and our technology gets to a point where, or maybe we just have to get off the planet anyway, it might stoke another, you know, kind of generation's passions.
I think it's interesting that you bring up that like the current generation isn't as excited about space travel because we're not really doing it. I also think it's because we don't have a lot of celebrity astronauts right now. If you look at the UK, where my sister lives, Chris Hadfield is so popular there. And I think space is more popular there as a result. You know, my sister-in-law writes children's books, and she wrote one about space, like with Chris Hadfield as a consultant. And it was like really big. And it was, you know, something that little kids were really excited for because they have this, you know, very conventionally attractive guy who is funny and is always on TV talking about it. And so that makes me think of in Apollo 13, when the news doesn't want to cover their mission because they're like, eh, we've already been to the moon. I feel like that's so American of us. We're so jaded so easily. So it's like, oh yeah, we've been to space. Who cares? That takes away some of the majesty from, unfortunately, my generation too.
Well, and I think things will change. You know, space tourism is apparently supposed to be a thing any day now. Ooh, and I think,
no.
Yeah, I think if that goes well, maybe, you know, again, I think people might be more interested in travel in space because it's a thing that you can actually like look at or kind of imagine. I think we're kind of far away from the imagination that we once had. However, you know, I think a space tourism thing might be the biggest disaster since Titanic. How do you test like a rocket going up with people in it other than like what NASA's doing? If NASA's not doing it, really? Titanic 2, who knows? Elon Musk, you do you. If you want to do it, fine. But I'm not going.
No.
Fingers crossed, if it does work, space tourism, yay. That would stoke imaginations of filmmakers to be like, it's not just like Gravity where it's just like astronauts stuck in space. How do I get out of here? It's going to be more about, well, what planet can we go to now? And we'll have like, we can actually be able to see things.
Yeah, I think a lot of the movies like this that have been popular in recent years have had an and. Like Gravity was this visually stunning thing. It was all about seeing it to believe it and seeing it in IMAX and the direction. And space just happened to be the canvas on which he painted. And, you know, I think First Man, you know, it's got Ryan and Damien Chazelle, and like that's really the angle they're going on as opposed to Neil Armstrong. So I think, yeah, I would like to watch movies like this, but for now we're getting a little extra punch to them. To wrap us up, I've been calling them sci-fi this whole podcast. I feel like some people would not call them sci-fi. What do you think, Brian?
Real sci.
Real sci?
Real sci.
Real sci, lo-fi.
Real psych. Real psych.
I mean, in like the purest definition of the term, it's fiction about science, even if the science is already real.
Well, but there is stuff that's like biopic-y. So, I mean, it's like a sci-pic.
Yeah.
Or sci-bio. Biopic? Yeah. Septic. So I think those are just historical dramas at this point. You know, they're just like a World War II film. Yeah. You know, they're just historical dramas. Something like Gravity where, you know, it's fictionalized, or like Interstellar. That probably does fall under the very large sci-fi band.
Okay, listeners, it's your turn. We want to hear from you guys. Are you excited about First Man? Do you have a favorite space film? Do you call them sci-fi? Let's talk about it on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod, but you can also tweet at us individually. I'm at Kalawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
And I'm at Brian Truitt.
And you can, of course, find our missing co-host, Brett Molina, at BrettMolina23. And don't forget, you can email us too. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. But we're going to wrap things up here. Thank you so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilots/producers, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd, the true pilots of the ship, of Apollo Mothership. That was a bad joke. Ignore that. If you like the podcast and you don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to the Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, we would love it if you left us a rating or review. It helps other people find us. It helps keep us on the air. We really love you guys, and so we want to keep making this podcast for you. But if Apple Podcast isn't your thing, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Until next Friday, nerds out.
Later.